So if you're into project management, I want to make the transition to agile, to an agile environment, possibly a scrum master, some type of role like that. You'll want to listen to this episode. So we talked to a good friend of mine who made such a switch a few years back from project manager, had his PMP, switched over to agile, to a scrum master. And we discussed that transition from the behavior side, of course, and what makes it so difficult and why he thinks it is difficult for some people to make that transition. It will surprise you. It surprised me. So take a listen on the next episode of The Agile Within.
Welcome to the podcast that challenges you from the inside. Come be more and discover the agile within. And now here's your host, Greg Miller.
Okay, welcome back. This is Greg to another episode. So today, we're talking about a very interesting topic, as they all are. I think they all are on this episode, on this show. So today's episode is going to be about making the transition from project manager to scrum master, which in my experience can be very difficult, especially the mindset, the behaviors needed in that. Some people are more able to do it better than others. Some are not. It depends on your aptitude, whether you're born with it or not. That's an episode coming up later. So today we have the pleasure of talking with Kevin Williams. He's a scrum master. And by the way, he's also a podcast host of the podcast called Workplace Influencers. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Oh, thanks so much, Greg. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for joining us. So before we get started, would you like to say maybe a couple words about your podcast, Workplace Influencers?
Sure. Workplace Influencer is it's a podcast for Christians in the workplace. Basically, we answer the question, how do I bring, you know, God's influence in a workplace in a relatable way? So the whole point is we can be Christians in the workplace and not be weird about it. And we can influence our workplace with our faith in a very relatable way. And so that's what the podcast is about. It's an interview style podcast.
Great. Thanks, Kevin. Are you on all of the podcast apps out there, which are you on just certain ones so people could find you?
So I'm on the iTunes, I'm on Spotify, and also on Audible.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm trying to get on iTunes, by the way. They haven't let me on there yet.
Oh, really?
That's the only one I'm not on yet.
Okay.
Been like 3 months. So yeah. Okay. Anyway, thank you for that, Kevin. So yeah. So you have been, in our previous conversations, getting ready for this recording here, you told me you were a former project manager and you have successfully made the leap to Scrum Master. So let's peel back that a little bit. So maybe talk about your experience as project manager and maybe what made you want to make the transition to Scrum Master.
Sure. And I'll go back just even a little bit further. I started my career as a developer, and I worked for a number of years as a developer. I'm going to age myself a little bit, but this was in the, you know, Visual Basic, you know, 6 era, right? So this, I'm kind of aging myself a little bit, but
that's
then
fine.
Then ASP, you know, VB.net and all of those things came out. And so I worked as a developer, and so I was able to see just how challenging it can be under that waterfall project management type, you know, work style. As a developer, you know, we were just expected to crank out, you know, code. I mean, and we worked feverishly. It wasn't a lot of talk about value, wasn't a lot of talk about necessarily priority. It was just, we've got to get this thing done, get it done, you know, as soon as you can. And, you know, that's it. And so then after doing that for a number of years, I said, I really would like to get on the other side of this and see, try my hand as a project manager. So I started working towards that, became a project manager, did that for a number of years. And then I was on the other side, right, where I was the one expecting status updates and expecting, you know, and doing those dreaded, you know, postmortem conversations after a project that went longer than, you know, than what was originally estimated. And we saw a lot of that, right? A lot of projects are funded, and then, you know, we think there's going to be a certain time frame when it's going to be delivered, and it usually stretches sometimes well beyond that time frame. And so, in all of that, having seen both sides, I experienced the morale hit from a developer side, because someone was always just kind of seemingly just, you know, cracking the whip, right, to get this stuff done. I remember, you know, there were sometimes all night sessions. There were sometimes weekend sessions, just trying to push through and get through, you know, get across the finish line. And then on the other side, as a project manager, you know, sometimes I ended up having to inflict some of that. Some of that was me, you know, cracking the whip, trying to get across the other side. And I just thought, there has to be a better way. There has to be a way to work that fits my personality. I am generally a more, you know, if your audience is familiar with StrengthsFinders, empathy is, right, is number one strength on my StrengthsFinder. Empathy. And then another strength of mine is what's it called? A developer, not the sense of, you know, coding developer, but
right,
who is interested in developing others. That was another strength of mine. So I started looking at it and said, well, how can I actually use these strengths in this line of work? And then, you know, what was interesting was I actually reached out to someone who I considered a mentor and said, hey, I'm thinking about taking the PMP exam. Do you have, because, you know, he was a PMP, had been a PMP for 10, 15 years. And he actually wrote me back and said, Kevin, I would highly recommend you look into Scrum, and I would highly recommend you look into Agile, and not into the PMP, because companies are starting to move toward Agile and starting to use Agile frameworks. And so I started reading up,
Was that the first you'd ever heard of that, Agile?
That was actually, I had heard of it.
Okay.
I'd heard of it because, you know, a lot of times, you know, we would try to mix in certain Agile themes or certain Agile ways of working while we were, you know, still doing the traditional waterfall method. So I had heard little things, but he was advising that I go deep and really try to learn, you know, some Agile frameworks and see about incorporating that. So that's what really started the transition for me.
Okay, great. So you got into there. Yeah. So as you were talking there, the strengths, I went through that, by the way. I don't remember what my strengths were, but I did go through that, and that was very eye-opening. So when you mentioned empathy and developer, the first thing I thought of, yeah, that's Scrum Master has that, in my opinion, has Scrum Master written all over it, to be empathetic to the team, especially when you're talking about this side of it, the values, the principles, the soft skills that we're talking about here on this podcast is what we talk about. So, And developer, yeah, I was that way too. I think developer was one of my strong ones because before I knew anything about Agile, before I was even into IT, I was a manager of some other department. I was actually a support IT support manager. We got support calls, and that was one of the things that I always tried to do was develop people. I really had a passion for that, and come to find out, it fits really well into this. So you got away. You got into Scrum from project manager. What's the first thing maybe that you noticed when you either were looking into it? I guess that's where we left off. When you're looking into it, you know you have these skills. You know it's not for you. What kept drawing you in?
I think that one of the first things I noticed, there was such an emphasis on the team. There was such an emphasis on asking the team. I just remember, that would actually be a phrase I would see and hear all the time. If a situation arose that, you know, the team had a problem to solve or if there was, you know, something going on with, you know, the advice would be, hey, ask the team, go back to the Scrum team and ask them how they want to handle the situation, which really speaks to the self-organization piece of Scrum, right? Mm-hmm. So really, this is a left turn away from the traditional project management mindset of this is not self-organization. It's actually, as a project manager, I'm responsible for organizing your work. I'm responsible for organizing the tasks. I'm responsible for making sure that these tasks are being handled, you know, on time, on budget, right? That iron triangle, right?
Yeah.
But the shift in mindset went to ask the team, because no one knows better than they do how to get this work and how to get this goal met, because they're the ones doing the work.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. That's I've experienced a little bit. I had a manager that say, I would ask the team a lot, ask the team, let's ask the team, let's ask the team. And he said, I don't know, half kidding, half serious. We don't have to ask the team about everything, do we? And I thought, and I stood back and I don't remember how I answered it with him, but that still rings in my head every now and then. And it just did here. And I'm thinking, I guess the way that I handle that is, I guess I would have to say it depends on the maturity of the team in the beginning.
Sure.
Like I have a team right now that knows nothing. Absolutely. I mean, still knows very little, even though I've had them for a few months, they're getting there, but knew very little. So you're in a teaching mode, right? In the beginning, right. You have to tell them because they don't know. You can't coach them because they don't know. You haven't told them anything yet. So you have to tell them in the beginning. Right. But once the teams I had at that time, going back this manager, they knew enough where I could say, ask the team. And I verified it with my peers and they were like, yeah, put it to the team. And there's a certain point when you do flip, like you said, if they're fairly self-organizing, I think they call it self-managing now in the Scrum guide, self-managing, you do want to put it to them. Right. And we become more, I think we become Scrum Masters more of the guardrails. Whereas, you know, and this is another thing of mine. I always feel like I walk on the edge of, do I tell them?
Yeah.
Do I coach them? Or do I just like, okay, this is a learning opportunity. You know what? I'm going to pull back and let them figure it out.
Yeah. And I think that's where, this is the nuance of being a Scrum Master, right? Yeah. My current manager gave me some really good advice. You know, he said, yes, he agrees 100%. We need to ask the team, but he said in certain situations, if the team is, it depends on their maturity level. Like you said, if the team is still growing, they're not haven't reached a certain level of maturity and you have an urgent, critical thing that you are doing. Mm. Sometimes servant leadership means, okay, I'm going to step in and I'm actually going to lead you and say, this is how we should do this.
Sure.
Because that's a part of servant leadership.
If they don't know, you have to. Yeah, you're right.
They don't know. And an analogy that he gave me, and I thought it was really good, is that, you know, you wouldn't take your toddler who's learning, or not toddler, but, you know, a young child who's learning how to ride a bicycle. You would actually hold their hand through that process until they are able to do it on their own. You wouldn't just put them on the bike and say, go. You would kind of hold them. You would coach them through it, but you would be very much active in holding their hand through that process. And to me, that really made a lot of sense.
That's a good one. I like that.
Yeah. It really did make a lot of sense. So it really does depend on the maturity level of your team.
Yeah, absolutely. So you got into Scrum. So big contrast that you noticed right away when you got into Scrum and you looked back at project managers and you were like, wow, just the way of behaving and the mindset that people had in Scrum and Agile compared to project, did anything stick out to you?
Yeah, a number of things stood out to me. So we already talked about one, which is the self-organization piece. Mm-hmm. The other thing that really stands out to me, and this is something I'm actively and intentionally coaching all of my teams on now, is if the ship is sinking, we're all sinking, right? This is not a QA. Your process is broken, or API, your code is broken, or UI, your code is broken. It's no. Our code is broken. Our process is broken, and let's work together to fix it. Right. This is where the cross functionality comes in. So instead of, kind of washing your, traditionally, right, developers are we, and I used to be one. Right. So this is traditionally we write code and we toss it over the fence. It's now QA. It's your turn. UAT. It's your turn. Right. And now UAT or QA, you are on the hook. Well, the mindset has shifted to say, no, we are actually the development team. The developers are on the hook for quality. It's not. And guess what? We don't have sub teams. So it's not if you're an automation test engineer, guess what? You're a part of the developer team. You're not on the automation team and you're not on the UAT team. This is the development team, right? And so as a developer, we together as developers are on the hook for the quality of the product that we're delivering.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, totally. That's right. Anything else you noticed right off the bat?
You know, the other thing that I noticed, and this is a big deal, whether you're doing Agile or traditional waterfall, there is still a fixation on dates. And delivery timeframes, right? That is never going to go away. And in fact, I was told by an executive one time, hey, you know, remember that this company is run by accountants. And, you know, and what they were saying to me was, they have to fund these projects, right? And they are expecting a certain ROI. And so they're going to want to know, we've allocated millions of dollars to this, when am I going to actually get it? Right. And so that is never going to go away. And I think it's the responsibility of the Scrum Master and of the team in conjunction, with the product group, the product owner, to be very, very transparent about our challenges and our, any obstacles that we may face and the data, allow the data to bring the message forward. Right. And so that was actually one of the biggest lessons that I learned as a Scrum Master is, if you're given a date that the team, when talking to the team, they say, man, there is just no way we can meet this.
Right.
This deliverable date. Well, that's okay. What is the, do we have any data that backs that opinion up? Because our leadership outside of our team, not that they don't care about how you feel, but they need data to substantiate that sentiment. They need data to go off of to make decisions, right? So we can't. So it becomes part of the responsibility of the Scrum Master to bring the data up and to be transparent about that data. And that data can be, hey, over the last six sprints, this has been our velocity. We've only we've been able to consistently do, you know, say 50 story points. And we have X amount of story points remaining. And so based on this data, and this is just a rough estimate, this is kind of where we may be able to deliver this. But again, emphasis on may, because this is complex work. Mm-hmm. And there's no guarantee. And in fact, one of the things that I've brought to our leaders and I bring to our Scrum teams is that whole concept of the cone of uncertainty.
Yeah.
You know, we just had a huge weather event in the
Yeah, you're down there. Yep, that's right.
We had a huge weather event. And there was a lot of uncertainty with even the forecast. We had, you know, weather forecasters telling us one thing and changing it while in their forecast they were making decisions or changing their, you know, their opinions, and not opinions, but their prognosis on the fly because new information was coming in. And so because of that cone of uncertainty, which says the further away you are, the less predictable, you know, this date is going to be. Now, as we get closer, we may be able to give you a more accurate reading or a more accurate date. So that fixation on dates is not going to go away. We have to use data to influence the decisions of our leadership.
That's right. Yeah. I want to go back to a question I just thought of. You said something early on about what was your lessons learned or something in project management. What did you call that?
Lessons learned, and I don't recall. Like
at the end of a project. Postmortem. So I just have a question because I was in a PMO for, I don't know, a year, and that was too long. So, and we did a postmortem, and I thought going into it, cause I had Agile experience at the time, and they thought they were trying to pick up some of the techniques from Agile principles. So they did what's called a postmortem, got everybody into a room, and I was all excited. Oh, this is going to be a retro. And we talked about things, and it was great. A lot of stuff was brought up, and then nothing ever happened.
Sure.
And I contacted the program manager twice. No response. I said, hey, are we going to follow this? We got some good learnings here. We can really address this. Mm-hmm. Nothing ever got addressed. So is that been your experience in project management where you have like a retro and it's just like a check the box? You don't really address, or do you actually ever try to get better in project management?
I mean, I have not, and I'm sure it's probably happened, but I have not been a part of a project in traditional project management where we did a postmortem and then there was an active follow through on that postmortem, because a project by definition has a start and an end. And so at the end of the project, yeah, you collected all this information from a postmortem, and it's usually a very large spreadsheet of information.
Yeah.
But there's nothing that they're doing next to follow up on that. So by contrast, in Scrum, you know, we do our sprint. If it's a 2-week sprint, we have a sprint retrospective. We collect the data from the previous 2 weeks. And then we say these one or two items are going to be our improvement items. But guess what? Those one or two items are going into the sprint planning session that's taking place the very next day.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so built in, we have a mechanism of actually following through on those things that we said that we're going to improve upon. It's very difficult when you don't have something following up right behind it.
Yeah. And I was stunned. I was floored. So yeah, you got the feedback, project management, you got the feedback, you collected it. And then it's like, okay, we did it. We move on. And I'm like, man, that continuous improvement, that mindset of we learned all this great stuff about what went wrong, what we could do, but they were either afraid to surface it or just didn't figure it was worthwhile. They didn't close that loop, like you said, and incorporate it back in because I wanted to get better because that's what I was used to doing. I was like, I don't want to be in this anymore. I don't want to, they're not listening. No one had a desire. It just you move on to the next project. Right. And right. Like you said, it ended, we did it because maybe it was on our checkbox. I don't know if you have a checkbox that you check, okay, we did it postmortem and have this data and we collect it. And, we keep doing that every project, but why? I mean, right. Why do you do it if you're not going to, Gunther Verheyen, he talks about inspection without adaptation. And when I hear this, that goes through my head. So, did that bother you when you guys did that?
It absolutely did, because a lot of times those postmortems were sometimes could be very contentious, you know, because again, it goes back to, what's the mindset? Are we blaming? Are we finger pointing? Or are we, what's the purpose? What's the intent? If the intent is for continuous improvement, then, you know, like one of the things that I like to do with my retrospectives, I start off by saying, hey, we're going to set the ground rules of this retrospective. We are coming into this retrospective with the understanding that everyone did the very best that they could with what they had over the last 2 weeks. And so immediately we're setting the tone to say, this is not a blame session. This is not a finger pointing session. This is a session that's going to allow us to surface some of the challenges that took place over the last 2 weeks for the purpose of really figuring out how we can improve upon those things the very next sprint, which starts the very next day, right? So, which is interesting, Greg, because I noticed in the new Scrum Guide, you know, the new Scrum Guide, they are becoming, they even went less prescriptive. So Scrum, is not very prescriptive to begin with. And they went a little bit even less prescriptive with this Scrum Guide, because in the previous Scrum Guide, you know, it was stronger language about the retrospective needing to take away from there one or two improvement items. Mm-hmm. Well, in this new Scrum Guide, it doesn't say that anymore. Mm-hmm. And so does it mean that we shouldn't do it? I don't think so. I think it's still a very good practice, but it really does go back to the self-organization of the teams and the whole mindset of Agile, which is, you know, we're going to allow the teams to figure out how to produce a working increment. And we're not going to be prescriptive with them on how they get that done. And so I still use the practice of, you know, taking one or two items away incorporating that into our next sprint. But it's interesting that it's no longer a, you know, quote unquote requirement in that Scrum Guide.
That is interesting. Yeah. So at the beginning there, little riff there, you said something about that we all did our best. Do you read the Prime Directive?
No, I have not.
Okay. So it sounded exactly like there's something out there called the Prime Directive. Okay. For anybody listening. And it says pretty much what you just said. I don't have it memorized, but I've read it at the beginning of retros before. Just Google Prime Directive, anybody. And it'll say kind of what you said, Kevin, we all did our best. That's kind of funny that you said that. It reads like no matter what we discover, we know we all did our best. And we're not here to blame, something like that. And it kind of sets the tone, just like you said. So, that's awesome.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, no, yeah. I found it, to be honest, I only found it maybe a couple years ago. Okay. I don't know how I came across it. I think I was Googling like something about retrospectives, and that's where I found it. It said Prime Directive. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's just, you know, a couple sentences. And it said, open your retros. So I started doing that. Haven't really gotten much feedback from people. Pizza's done, right? Yeah. Kevin's pizza is ready. Yeah. I think it was pretty helpful in setting the tone for retro, like you said. So that's good. I want to ask you, why do you think that some project managers are more successful than others? Because I've seen at other companies, I've seen it done poorly. I would not recommend, like, there might be people listening here. Maybe you're a project manager mm-hmm. right now. Maybe you want to get into Scrum. So Kevin's been through that. So I've seen it where it was at a company, they took all their project managers and just converted them over to Scrum Masters mm-hmm. with massive failures to, you know, some successes. Mm-hmm. But what would you equate that to if someone did that? And what would you think that, what would make people successful or unsuccessful if that happened to them?
Sure. I really think, and I get this question a lot because, you know, I have a lunch and learn that I facilitate every week. And we have a lot of people who are traditional project managers who are making that transition over into Scrum Master. And one of the things that I always say is it really does have to do with mindset. Do you have a growth and a learning mindset, or do you have a fixed mindset? Because if you have a fixed mindset, I've come across people, if you ask them, it's interesting. Like I've interviewed people, for a job, you know, that they wanted to be a Scrum Master, in our organization. I've interviewed them. And one of the questions that I ask sometimes is, on a scale of 1 to 10, please tell me what your skill level is, your agile skill level. You'll be surprised how many people come back and say they have a 9 or even a 10. Okay. And immediately that puts a red flag for me because it's not to say that this is some sort of rocket science to where, you know, only a select few can get it. But if I see on your resume that you've had, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years of work, you still haven't seen everything, right? So how can you say that you have mastered this agile, right? And so, sure. It's a red flag. It doesn't necessarily disqualify the individual, but it's a red flag because then I go a little bit deeper on, okay, so let's talk about the mindset here. Do you have a learning mindset? So a project manager who comes across as someone who thinks they already know Agile or already know Scrum, and I've heard people say it, you know, yeah, I went off and got my certification.
Yeah.
I know Scrum. I know Agile, or I've been working in Agile for 15 years. I've heard that. But yet they've been a project manager. To me, that immediately they have put a block on their ability to learn, because now they actually believe that they know more than they actually do. And so to me, that's a red flag. And so if someone's making that transition, I would highly recommend that individual adopt a learning mindset. Say, I don't know what I don't know, and I'm willing to be coached, and I'm willing to make mistakes, to run experiments, and to learn. And then I think that person would succeed. If you have a fixed mindset, you're going to have a very difficult time succeeding.
Yeah, and I would absolutely agree with that. I was just thinking of an example. I worked on a team. I was new to a company. I was put on a team with another existing agilist. They call them agilists, not scrum masters, where I was. And they said, just co-agilist with this person. And I realized pretty quickly that this person was not the right fit. And, one-on-ones, we shared the same manager. So unfortunately I had to give feedback to, our manager about her. And the one thing that I remember myself saying to her was, she just wasn't coachable, saying to my manager about this other woman. She just wasn't coachable. She didn't have that growth mindset. I would work with her. A lot of people, you can sit down and talk like this and say, hey, Kevin, you know, what do you think about this? And what about this? Or have you tried this? And most people will listen and say, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. No, there was none of that. It was, you know, this person had gone through a boot camp
sure.
for a couple of weeks. And it's like, what you were saying, it's like, here you go. You get your certification. 2 weeks, go forth and Scrum Master. And it's like, what the heck? Whenever I see that, that's a red flag for me. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Right.
They took this whole team and the product owner and put him through boot camps and said, you're on a team together. And nobody had experience. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So that person didn't make it. And then I was the Scrum Master of the team. And I felt bad. I really did. Because I didn't intend for her to lose her job, but she did. But it was not set up for success. So you're exactly right. Growth mindset. Just for anybody listening, if the one takeaway I think you should take away from this would be that it's your mindset. Change your, be willing to say, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Let me find out or teach me. Great advice, Kevin.
You know, one of the things that really benefited me, and you had him on your podcast, Blake McMillan, Improving. He really took some time and he coached me. He coached me in the craft of being a Scrum Master, and I just became a sponge. I just soaked it all up, right? Yeah. Yeah. And the more I was open, the more he was willing to give. And so that never, mm-hmm. right. And so I would highly recommend anyone who's wanting to make this transition. It's a great, very fulfilling, role, but you have to be a learner. You have to be someone who's willing to run experiments, try something new, be willing to be bad at it for a little bit and learn from it. If you're mm-hmm. coachable, then you'll succeed.
Well, yeah. As we're talking, I'm just thinking, so everyone, we're all smart people, right? You're a smart person. You were in project management. People listening are smart people. They're learners. We went to school. I'm just sitting here thinking this through. To some extent, we're all learners, but we reached that point where, like you were talking about earlier, you said you wanted to get your PMP. So that shows you wanted to continue either learning or you wanted to validate your learning. So, but you wanted to get that because you thought it would help you, which most people want to do, help you either advance to get the certification or learn more, which is great. So I got to believe that people in project management, they have that. Yeah. The somewhere along the line, I don't know, what do you think? Somewhere along the line, they just get, I don't know, autopilot, and this is the way we do things, and I don't need to learn anything. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, there could be several different reasons for this. So think about it this way. I've had the opportunity to coach leaders in our organization. And you have very successful people who are, you know, vice presidents, maybe even some senior vice presidents. And they're used to doing things in a certain way. And they've achieved success by doing it that way. And then all of a sudden, now we're asking you to think about it a different way and to do it differently. And so now the thought is, am I going to have to abandon what has brought me success so far? Mm. So if you're that project manager who's spent time and really honed that craft of project manager, even went out and invested the time, and it's rigorous mm-hmm. to go get the PMP. We're not downplaying that whatsoever. It's a rigorous thing to do. So you go and you get your PMP, and you've invested time, you've invested money in doing that. And then now you're being asked to kind of take that information, not totally throw it away, but in some cases, yes, throw it away and adopt a new way of thinking about this work. That can be, I think some of the psychological aspects of that can be daunting for some people, mm-hmm. you know? So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If it's something you've known, I don't know, how long were you in project management?
About 5 years.
Okay. I guess that's a decent amount of time, I think, to get in the, but yeah, I mean, I work even now, I work with people that 20, 25 years of doing waterfall.
Sure.
And there's this one woman that she's got her heels dug in as far as you can go mm-hmm. into the ground. And she is convinced that this is the way to go. and the rest of us doing Agile, we don't understand. This is the only way to do it. No other way is going to work. And unfortunately for me, she's in an influential position. She's a stakeholder.
Sure.
Trying to figure out how to approach her. And that's something that, I'm not sure how to overcome that, but,
The thing I found with that, and I'm still learning this, this is not by any means, saying I've got all the answers on this, but one of the things, you know, we have our sprint reviews, right? One of the things that I've really been coaching with our teams and with our product owner is let the data do the talking. At the sprint review, bring data to the table, because people will argue about opinions, but if you bring actual data and say, you know, this is the data, I like to use burn up charts.
Okay.
I show, okay, we have a feature that we wanted to deliver. This is how many stories we have left to deliver this feature. The data is not lying to you. If something, last quarter we were able to deliver, we planned on four features. We were able to deliver three of them. You know, the data is not lying to you. And so I think that how we influence stakeholders who are pretty much got their heels dug in, they're not going to listen to anything else, but they're going to see the data. Mm-hmm. They're going to see that, oh, okay. We're actually able to accomplish more, and we're actually bringing more valuable items into production by doing it this way. But we have to have the data to prove it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, as you know, in Waterfall, they want all the requirements up front, right? So as you were talking, I was like, yeah, but this, I could go down this forever, but I think this person would be, yeah, but you didn't deliver everything, right? You delivered MVP, right?
Sure.
We can't do this and this and that, which is usually, as you know, going to be the nice to haves, right? Lower down the, maybe we did deliver the value, obviously, for doing MVP. We didn't deliver everything. No. So in her mind, it would be a failure.
Interesting.
Right. Because we didn't deliver, we didn't finish everything. To your point earlier, the iron triangle, we didn't deliver all of the scope.
Yeah.
So it's a convoluted thing. So great. So anything else on your journey that gotchas that you can think of that, what would make growth mindset be successful. So anything else that would be like a gotcha, like if you came into this and if something else little, maybe not as big as that, that would get you, that might throw you, somebody might not see coming.
Yeah. I can't stress enough, especially for the Scrum Masters listening, is the trust of the team. I feel like I'm spending a lot of time investing in developing relationships with my teams.
Sure.
Trying to get them to know them on a personal level. And it's a little bit more difficult in the virtual world, because now we don't have the benefit of being in the same room together. But I've tried to do different things to get to know the individuals on the team and to build trust. If we can spend the time up front, because a lot of times what happens, this is a big gotcha. It got me. This is something that I learned this past year. Oftentimes what happens is you spin up a new team or you have a new project. And what ends up happening is we just jump in and we start sprinting, right? We set our sprint cadence and we just go for it. What would happen if we take some time up front and get to know each other? Before we start training, get to know each other, get to build empathy with each other, understanding that there are things that we have in common, there are things that we don't have in common, really developing empathy with each other, and then start sprinting. Well, I found, because I've tried this now, I had one team that we didn't do that. We just jumped in immediately and started sprinting. And there was a lot of contention at the beginning for months. Yeah. The team just disagreed on so many different levels. And it was not a psychologically safe place where people felt like they can express themselves freely. And it has taken time. And now we're out from the other side of that. But then I have another team where instead of just starting sprinting, and this, what's interesting about this team is they are all outside consultants. Yeah. And none of them are actually employees of, you know, the company I work for. Right. But we took time. We took an entire sprint where we did a few little things, you know, but we took an entire sprint and just, hey, let's just get to know one another, our working style, our communication styles. Let's build trust and empathy with each other and then get heavy in into the sprints. And I'm telling you, that has paid off. It's been a dramatic difference in this. You know, there's a book called The Speed of Trust.
Yeah.
There's a dramatic difference in our agility, in our ability to be agile, because we have that trust built up front.
You know, that's a great idea. I learned that. I've never done that before. I learned something new from you there. That's awesome. Yeah. So how are you able to take a sprint to do that without signing up for any work, without anybody asking? You said you did a little things. Okay. But was it kind of, did you try to, you saw the work wasn't going to hit your team for a little bit of time, so you purposely did this, or how were you able to do that?
So in this particular case, this team was put together specifically to handle one of the dependencies for my other team. So we have one team is marching toward a pilot release of our software, and we have this dependency, and we said, well, let's just create another team that will handle that work so that the main team can focus on their piece. And so there's a critical nature to this work on this other team, that the new team that got spun up. But you know, one of the things that I did was I set expectations with our leadership from the very beginning. We had a actual kickoff meeting where we had all the stakeholders, we had all the, you know, the vice presidents, we had, you know, just the different engineering stakeholders and the business stakeholders together. And they got involved in the getting to know you sessions as well. Because I said to the team, these are your stakeholders. They need to understand you and where you're coming from, but you also need to understand them. So we took time and allowed the stakeholders to share the vision of this product that we're delivering. They shared why this was important. They shared, you know, the vision as to how this is actually going to help our company. And we just, you know, they bought in because it was an opportunity for them to communicate just the critical nature of this work. And so they were all on board with that. And then we took off running once everyone understood why we were doing this work and who was actually doing it, who were the players, what are their personalities, what are their backgrounds, where are they from? You know, we played little games like, you know, tell us, you know, a lot of them are from foreign countries. Tell us a little bit about your country. Share something that you miss about your country. Share something that you would like, you know, that you love about your country. So it was a matter of, hey, let's just get to know each other as human beings.
Yeah.
Right. And this is what goes back to this humane way of working.
Yes.
Right. Let's get to know each other as human beings, not just as people who are going to produce another cog or another product. Right.
Right. So. Yeah, that I loved hearing you say that. That I've never had a team that did that. That sounds really awesome that they did that. That the stakeholders, the executives bought in and did that. I've never had I've had teams say, "What the heck are we doing? We need a vision statement," and go to the product owner, and they gladly did it. But something like that up front, I've never experienced it, and I think that's wonderful. I think we should always do that.
That's been a game changer for us.
I can understand why. Awesome. Yeah. So, Kevin, anything else you can add for us about your experience going from project manager to Scrum Master?
So I think we've covered it. I think that, you know, like I said, some of the main takeaways are, you know, be a learner, have a learning growth mindset, and run experiments. And basically you have a low risk threshold here. When you have, you know, it's low risk to run an experiment. We're talking about a 2 weeks, you know,
sprint, right?
Run an experiment, you know, prove out a hypothesis, try something new. And if nothing else, it's either going to, you know, wildly succeed or moderately succeed, or it may fail, but you will learn something in that process. And so I'm a big proponent of just trying something, trying an experiment. One of the experiments that we tried, and again, this is what one of the teams, you know, we started off really bumpy, and it was a lot of contention on the team because they didn't want to work. They wanted to continue working in their silos, and they did not want to work in a full stack development type way, end to end development, right? They wanted to continue working in their silos. And so, you know, I was coaching the team on, hey, let's divide these features into thinly sliced, you know, full stack pieces of, you know, functionality here. So that when we do our sprint review, we can show it from end to end. Well, there was a lot of psychological safety issues with that because, you know, part of the team felt like, well, what if we deliver our piece, but then the other side, you know, the back end doesn't deliver theirs, and then we're not going to be able to show anything. And I said, well, that's the point. We're going to work together and we're going to deliver it together. And so it took a while. It took a while for us to get to the place where they agreed to do that. But that was a major experiment for us.
Yeah.
And so we did it. The team swears by it now. They said, why haven't we been doing this all along? You know?
They get light bulbs coming on. Yeah.
Yeah. But they didn't trust each other. Right. And so they didn't want to look foolish at the sprint review.
Mm-mm.
Trust one another. And so it's time to get there. So now on this other team, like I said, the one that, you know, we took time up front to build trust, we immediately started working in thinly sliced features because they trusted each other.
Yeah. Yep. I've always been a proponent of, I preach trust all the time, that it's foundational to everything else we talked here, but it doesn't come easy. It comes slowly. And you mentioned experiments. I'm going through an experiment now. It's something with our sprint review, trying something. And we'll see how it goes. My sprint review is next week. So this is new to the team. So thanks, Kevin. Appreciate your time. So our guest today has been Kevin Williams. Kevin is a Scrum Master, recovering project manager in Good Recovery, right? Also a podcast host of Workplace Influencers. Want to say a couple more words about that before we go?
So if you're interested, if you are a Christian in the workplace and you're interested, and even if you're not a Christian, just think this would be something interesting to listen to, that's fine too. We welcome you. It's called Workplace Influencer, and it's just a way we answer the question, how do I, as a believer, how do I bring God's influence into the workplace in a relatable way?
Awesome. Great. Check that out. It's on iTunes, Spotify. What else did I miss?
And Audible.
So check it out there. Yes, Kevin's a fellow podcaster. I want to support that. So thanks again for joining us for this episode where we talked about project managers making the transition to Scrum Masters and the mindset behaviors involved and all of that. It's been a great discussion. So please reach out to me on my different social media platforms that I'm on. Email me, gregmiller@theagilewithin.com. Agilewithin.com on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram, all that good stuff. Send me your questions, your comments. I really appreciate that. And any show suggestions? I always like to take show suggestions. I know connected with a lot of people on LinkedIn, a lot of good ideas. I've taken some LinkedIn ideas and turned them into some podcasts here coming up. So also don't forget to subscribe, to like it on the podcast. So then you'll get notified of new episodes coming up. And also something new I have, if you want to become a patron, you can sign up through Patreon. You can give a monthly subscription here. I have no sponsors. This is totally paid for by myself, to make a shameful plug, but I do pay for all this by myself. And any support, if you really enjoy this podcast, I know a lot of you do, please consider at any amount you can give would be greatly appreciated. So another episode of the Agile Within in the books. Thanks for joining. This is Greg, where we help you to be more agile.